This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we hope that if you're listening out across America, why, you'll give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls, because we have with us Charles Van Wyk, and he is from South Africa. He works with our good friend, Dr. Peter Hammond, in the In Touch Ministry. And we just had a chance to meet Charles last night. And, of course, we had a wonderful two-hour program with him as we sort of relived our experiences when my wife and I lived in South Africa, and I taught at the University of the Orange Free State. But we're going to be talking about really what's going on over there now. We're going to start out, though, with the story of what happened one evening when Charles was at church in South Africa. And, of course, it was a typical church service. And then, of course, Charles, what actually happened that drew your attention to the fact that something was seriously wrong?
Yes, Dr. Stan, great to be with you today again, and hello, listeners. We were sitting on the 25th of July, 1993, listening to some young people on the stage singing to us in church, worshipping the Lord, when all of a sudden there was a shuffle at the front of the church. The church is built very much like a cinema. I was sitting near the back, and it's higher up near the back and lower in the front of the church near the stage. And all of a sudden, the front door swung open next to the stage, and terrorists entered the church, and they lobbed hand grenades into the audience that had nails attached to them to get extra impact, and they had automatic assault rifles with them, and then indiscriminately started shooting into the audience. Instinctively, everybody went straight down to the ground, got down as low as possible, and that's when I pulled out a .38 special revolver I was carrying on myself that evening, and I returned fire, hitting one of the terrorists. I took two shots inside at them, and then I ran outside the back of the church and fired another three shots outside at them to try and stop the attack. And they murdered 11 people that evening and injured 54.
Now, but of course, the amazing thing was that as soon as you shot back, here you are with a pistol, and they've got automatic weapons, and they're running for cover because they're frightened to death because somebody shot back at them.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It's unbelievable how terrorists show cowardice in the face of the enemy, defending themselves. But that's pretty normal. We found that in other cases in South Africa, too, where a pub was attacked at a golf estate, a restaurant pub, and there was also, in fact, it was a Rhodesian, ex-Rhodesian, that was there with a light weapon, and he also returned fire and sent the terrorists running.
All right, fine. Well, of course, this is an amazing story, and we're just getting to the very beginning of it, because, of course, the terrorists fled. One of them was wounded. They were able to identify him. He was eventually arrested and taken to prison, and that really begins an incredible, incredible story of course, the impact you could have on the terrorist if you offer him an alternative. These are men who have accepted the Marxist liberation theology, have been misled, and of course, when we get back, we'll tell you how Charles was able to impact on the lives of a number of these terrorists. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Charles Van Wyk. He's from South Africa. He works in South Africa with Dr. Peter Hammond. and in the In Touch Ministries. And Dr. Hammond's been a guest on our program many, many times, and always is a pleasure. We, in fact, interviewed him just a few weeks ago, and we'll be interviewing him on our Saturday program, I believe, this coming weekend. But under any, I guess we interviewed him last weekend. Under any circumstances, our guest today was in a church in South Africa, and of course, there were three terrorists that came into this church in the middle of the service and started firing indiscriminately into the audience, killed 11 people, wounded over 50 of them, hand grenades. And of course, Shaw was armed with a pistol. And when he shot back at the terrorists, they ran for cover. And of course, he was able to wound at least one of them. And they were then able to, by identifying his blood and the car, where they were able to track him down. And did they arrest all three of the terrorists or just the one?
Yes, actually, there were four of them, because there was one in the getaway car, too. One of them was killed in a motor car accident after the attack, not the same night, months later. So three of them were eventually arrested. Only one went to jail, and he's a chap that I testified against in the Supreme Court. The other two, the judicial system didn't bother with going through the court process, because the Truth and Reconciliation Commission had started, and they had done application to that to get amnesty.
Well, now, was this before or after the black takeover of South Africa?
This was after. After the African National Congress came to power.
But even after they came to power, you could still get out of a jail-free card if you simply applied for one. Was that how it worked?
Yes. What happened was that the actual attack still took place while the negotiations were on for what they call the New South Africa. There's nothing new about it, but that's what it was called. And then after that, the African National Congress came to power, and then they established what they called the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which didn't stand up to the wording. It actually caused more trouble and more hatred in South Africa than anything else. But what happened at this was Archbishop Desmond Tutu was heading up the commission, which also, interestingly enough, with, as far as your church and state separation, but both under God's word, is concerned, is also a problem. But never mind that. People would do, terrorists that had been terrorizing people, or people that had been involved with murder, or injuring people in the name of their just cause during the apartheid system, could do application to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission to get amnesty, so that they wouldn't have to go through the judicial system and possibly end up in court or in jail for what they did.
All right, we're going to be back in just a moment when we bring our last station online. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and of course our guest is Charles Van Wyk, and he's from South Africa. He lives, do you live in Cape Town now?
That's right, I live in Cape Town, South Africa.
Right, fine. That's one of the most beautiful cities in the world, and if you've never seen it, behind, of course, is this flat Table Mountain. It's called Table Mountain there, and of course the clouds very often will of course hang over that, and then in front of you is the Atlantic Ocean on one, and of course certainly much of the architecture very reminiscent of San Francisco, very old, although I'm sure some of it's being redone at the present time. And so there were multi-level skyscrapers going in while I was there, and yet there were areas that were really very, very quaint and very old. So really, Cape Town is a wonderful city. But anyway, of course, we were talking about what had happened here. You shot and wounded one of the terrorists, and then, of course, you testify against him. And how long was he sent to prison for?
He was just sent to prison for, he was in there less than 2 years because of the TRC application, Truth and Reconciliation Commission. So he didn't spend much time there. And then they were given amnesty, all three of them. And that was, then they were let out. It was pretty interesting, because when I spoke to Kaya, the chap that I shot, I said to him, you lie in court, you tell lies in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, what's wrong with you? How do you deal with things? And he said to me, oh, no, he said, that's politics. That's like separate, you don't have to worry about that. So you tell the truth in your normal life, but if things come to politics, then you're allowed to lie. And it's just pretty interesting that, that kind of worldview generates, exactly what these people are up to. And, depending on the situation, you can do whatever you like, as long as It is just, you know, you can justify anything in the name of your cause that you're fighting for.
And, of course, these people really think that they're fighting for freedom. They've been, of course, indoctrinated in this Marxist concept because, contrary to everything you read in America, this was a communist revolution. Certainly, Nelson Mandela is a Marxist. The people who replaced him are Marxist. The ANC is Marxist. But, of course, we can't tell the American people that. They might wonder why we brought a Marxist to power. But when he came to power, of course, there was Fidel Castro and the communists from all over the country were there to congratulate Nelson Mandela when he came to power. But then we brought Mugabe to power in Rhodesia. He's a communist. We brought Neto to power in Southwest Africa. He is a communist. We brought the Angolan communists, the MPLA, to power. And, of course, we certainly have not been opposing the communists who this war in the Congo is all about, establishing a communist regime there. And apparently Uganda and Rwanda are opposing this, whereas Rhodesia and the other countries, other communist countries, are supporting it. And the fact that the average American doesn't know that simply is a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. But you actually went and shared the Lord with this man that you'd shot, didn't you?
That's right. I went off to the jail after he had been incarcerated. I met with his commander. His name was Letlapa Ntahlele. And he took me to introduce me to Kaya in jail. But it's quite interesting because what happened was I was interviewed with Letlapa Ntahlele on television. And while the TV cameras were running, I invited him with to church. He's an atheist. And he agreed on the camera to come to church with me. And so he especially flew down from Johannesburg to make sure he made it to the appointment that I'd made with him. But I didn't take him to the St. James Church, which is what everybody was expecting, where the massacre took place. All the reporters arrived and everything. But I took him to my own church where, you know, without the press causing havoc and distracting him, he could listen to the true gospel. And then after that, we went off to meet Kaya in jail together.
And then, of course, later he invited you to come up into one of the Bantu stands, what used to be a Bantu stand, to meet with a number of the terrorists and his supporters. And of course, then you ended up there, you and one friend, just completely surrounded by people who embrace this liberation theology and terrorism.
That's right. But it's pretty interesting because already in the jail when I met with Kaya, the chap that I'd shot, he made it very clear to me that he believed that he was going to heaven because he'd been fighting for a just cause. So he had already embraced this whole idea of liberation theology, which, you know, people like Archbishop Desmond Tutu were teaching in South Africa. And, you know, the gospel of salvation by the grace of God through faith was something totally new to him. He had never heard this before. And anyway, then I ended up, after quite a while, much later, a few years later, Letlapa Ntahlele, the commanding officer, invited me to this homecoming meeting up in the northern province that you've just mentioned.
Now, why don't you tell our listeners about that and, of course, how you approached this group of terrorists that asked you to speak and, of course, how you were given 15 minutes to speak. Everybody else was given 3 minutes.
That's right. Yeah, it was pretty interesting. I was invited to this political rally celebrating the homecoming of Letlapa Ntahlele. He had been away for a long time fighting the war. He had been out of South Africa. He was trained up in Russia and Tanzania. And what happened was he had rejected the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, so he refused to, well, he withdrew his application to them and said they're just a whitewash thing, it's just a waste of time, and he wouldn't do application to them. And the government after that, what appeared to be a political move, got the judicial system to withdraw all charges against him. Now, he had already, by his command, had murdered 11 people in our church. Other people were murdered in a pub near us, other people in a restaurant in East London. He had many charges of murder against him, and all of a sudden this was the charges were withdrawn. So to celebrate this, they were going to have a big homecoming celebration at his home up in the northern province about 1,000 miles away from where I was living. And out of the blue, he gives me this call and invites me to come to this meeting, and I was pretty surprised at it, and this is quite interesting because I said to him, Letlapa, I'm concerned about my own health and things around there with you guys. You know, anybody can take me out there. And he said to me, I said to him, I fear for my life with these people that you've been working with. And he said to me, no, you and your God, nothing will ever happen to you. You got a God that looks after you. And he's an atheist. It's pretty strange. You know, he doesn't believe in God, but he knows that I've got one that looks after me. Anyway, eventually a friend of mine also spoke me into it, and I could fly up to Johannesburg through the support of one of my supporters. I'm a full-time missionary. And I was taken up to this meeting, very far. We still had to drive by car and went on dirt roads and everything into the middle of nowhere in some tiny little village. And when I got there, the people were already toying outside the house. They were jumping up and down. It's basically happens at political meetings where these people get work themselves up into a frenzy with dancing and chanting and all this sort of thing. And that was enough to scare me even more. And what happened then was that we eventually had this meeting that got started, and the master of ceremonies was the local tribal chief, and he was exceptionally strict with the speakers. There were 22 speakers at the meeting, and he told them that each of them could only have 3 minutes. And what really also put fear into me was, at this meeting, all the soldiers or the cadres that had been fighting and involved in terrorism in South Africa, they were all sitting right in the front of this hall. It was just jam-packed with revolutionaries and people that backed up their cause. And the people, the doors were jammed up. You couldn't get in. People were looking through the windows outside. I mean, there's just no way to get in or out of this hall. And they would stand up, be asked to stand up, and the crowd would just cheer and go crazy for them. And there I am, a little white guy, sitting in amongst all of this that's going on there. But anyway, when it came to my time to speak, the speaker or the master ceremony said, well, Charles van Dyk doesn't have 3 minutes. He's got 15 minutes. And I almost fell off my chair because I had sat there when I heard that everybody had 3 minutes, and I'd reworked my whole speech. So that was a bit of a shock. And that's when I introduced him to the world's greatest revolutionary, and that's what my talk was about there.
Well, I think, why don't you tell our listeners about that? Because I think it's a wonderful, wonderful approach. I mean, who is the greatest revolutionary in the world?
Oh, well, I was telling them about this world's greatest revolutionary. And in fact, if people want to actually read the full tract on this, it's available on our website at www.frontline.org.za. It is a leaflet written by Dr. Peter Hammond, and I used that as a basis for my speech. And I told them about the world's greatest revolutionary was a second-class citizen in an oppressed nation under foreign occupation. It was a time of violence and hatred, but yet he lived a life of love. And he was arrested, he was beaten, he was whipped, spat at, thorns shoved into his head, nails driven through his hands and his feet, and a sword was taken and thrust into his side. And as I was telling these people about this revolutionary, they were just gasping and couldn't believe it, but yet they could understand the pain and suffering of revolutionaries, because these were their friends and these were the people they were supporting, fighting for the so-called just cause in South Africa. I told them further that the greatest revolutionary that ever lived, his message was so revolutionary that the authorities were so threatened by him that they posted guards to guard his corpse in the grave, and that's how scared they were of him and so concerned about this revolution spreading. I carried on that the grave was later found empty, and it's believed that he had actually risen from the dead. And the revolution grew after his death, even though vicious persecution of his followers took place. The empire tried everything to destroy his teachings. But his followers were stoned, they were burnt, they were eaten by wild animals in stadiums while the crowds cheered on. And other followers were even tortured and massacred. Yet they returned good for evil, love for hate. They lived lives of joy and faith, and the blood of the martyrs appeared to be the seed for the continuation of the revolution. And it said that for every one that died in the arena, 10 stood up in the stadium to replace that one person. At the end, the empire was defeated from within and taken over by these peace-loving people. And I ended a revolutionary life with a revolutionary message. Jesus Christ has continued to make a revolutionary impact on millions of people all over the world. I call on you to join me in this revolution. And then I handed to the Klaap and Bechlele, the commander, a Northern Sesotho Bible, and I told them this is a historical document documenting the details of the world's greatest revolutionary. And I handed the Bible to him with a handshake, and inside I'd asked him, the Klaap, and said, I pray that you will join me in the following the world's greatest revolutionary, Jesus Christ.
Well, I think that's a wonderful, wonderful story, and we'll be back in just a few moments here with our special guest, Charles Van Dyke.
Another of our fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And, of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders on which we're actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen and what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America, our values, our future are under attack today.
Called Alamet. You know all the healthy reasons to take garlic, but isn't it time you got your money's worth? A recent study found the 24 leading brands of garlic pills provided little, if any, allicin, garlic's primary active ingredient. Try Alamex, which is the only odorless garlic supplement to provide pure allicin, a full 180 milligrams. That's the power of 15 fresh cloves of garlic. Alamex isn't available in stores, so call 866-405-4000. That's Alamex at 866-405-4000.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention that if you would like to have a water filter that you can use in your house or really use any place you want to, there is nothing better than a Big Berkey. Now, the Big Berkey water filters have been used. The design has been used for 150 years by missionaries throughout the world. It's stainless steel. It filters about 2.5 gallons and about 25 gallons during the course of the day. It has ceramic filters that are packed with filled with activated carbon, and of course the filter takes out the bacteria, the carbon takes out the heavy metals and certainly the undesirable metals or insecticides and things of that sort. So the Big Berkey has been a standard for a long period of time, and if there were any sort of a problem why you could filter lake or water or pond water, and of course the ordinary these goes for $279. We offer them for $239, and if you buy it through us, well, you'll get a four tape set or a video. We do charge you $10 for shipping, but we give you a video or a four tape set that we've actually produced. So that's the Big Berkey water filter, available from Radio Liberty, but of course it's not available in either California or in Iowa. However, there is another excellent filter. It's called a Berkey Light, and it has a different type. It's basically, it's a clear, it's made out of material you have for bulletproof glass, so you can see the water levels, which is an advantage. It has a different type of filter, which is really a water purifier. It does a much better job in taking out the unwanted chemicals, but leaving the natural minerals in. And, of course, the Berkey Light is ordinarily $199. If you buy it through us, plus shipping, and then, of course, you'll get the video or the four tape set that we have produced free of charge. Now go to our website at radioliberty.com. You can actually see these there. The Berkey Light is available in all states but Iowa. It's a portable filter. And give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and ask for the Big Berkey or the Berkey Light. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest is Charles Van Dyke. He's from South Africa, and he's visiting over here. He's going to be with us for a short period of time, and I'm hoping that every time he gets back over here, he'll give us a call, and we can talk about what's going on in that area. And so you've actually had an opportunity to minister to this, terrorist leader on several times, haven't you?
Yes, that's right. I met him the first time when I went to meet his cadre, the young chap, Kaya, that I shot in jail. And then we also spent time having lunch after that together, discussing issues. I was giving him the gospel, and he was telling me about his just cause. And then I also met him at his home. And then he went, and after the meeting at his home, I thought I'd never, you know, see him ever again after giving the gospel to all these people. And he phoned me and asked me to come speak at another meeting in Khayelitsha near Cape Town. So I took that opportunity too. And there I also spoke to them about the Lord's, the world's greatest revolutionary, but I also went further into 2 Corinthians 5, dealing with the reconciliation between man and God, because this whole forum discussion in this township was with regards to unity and reconciliation. So I told them that we first got to be reconciled, man with God, before we can really be reconciled between man and man. And I had a great opportunity there, and what we did was I took some friends with me, and we took loads of Bibles with to hand out at the second meeting. And it was pretty interesting because the people just rushed into a line afterwards over to get these Bibles. I've got photographs of my friend just being almost run over by people wanting Bibles. And one lady got shoved out of the line just from the pure pressure of people trying to get into this queue. And she was standing in front of me crying afterwards. It was just unbelievable how desperate these people were for the Word of God. And obviously that's not something that hit the newspapers, you know, but that seemed to have been the excitement of the day for all the people who came to the second meeting.
Well, of course, you know, the reason that people embrace communism is because they're looking for something, they're looking for a cause. And of course, you know, it's been said, you know, that those who reject God, it's not that they believe in nothing, it's that they believe in anything, and they tend to get drawn into communism without understanding the whole thing is a lie. And the very people who are pushing this here in the United States are people like the Rockefeller Foundation and the Ford Foundation and the Carnegie Foundation. If you doubt that, you need to get our book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence, or get my book, A Brotherhood of Darkness, which gets into the whole background of who's really behind communism. They want to break down our society. They want to centralize all power with government. And then who do you think is going to be in control? The people? You've got another thought coming. Who is it who has enough money to buy the politicians? And this is exactly the way that it works. And in South Africa, of course, and especially in Rhodesia, we see this today, where, of course, people have fought a revolutionary war for land and for equality. And suddenly the ruling class gets all the land. And this is, of course, what happens in all of these Marxist societies. It doesn't matter whether the black or white power. Why, of course, it is a power structure having nothing to do with freedom or redistribution of the wealth. It redistributes not the wealth of the wealthy, but the wealth, of course, of the middle class. And then everybody, of course, is in servitude. So basically what's happening in South Africa as far as the black man? Is the black man really doing much better than he did under the apartheid system?
No, it's pretty interesting. I was reading even in a liberal newspaper in my own city in Cape Town how they were saying there how things have been so much better during apartheid. And it was quite funny to read this because these liberal newspapers were the people that put the African National Congress, Nelson Mandela's group, into power. And even when I sat and had lunch with the Klaas and Bekele, the commander of these terrorists, I said to him, you know, is this what you fought for? I mean, are you honestly happy with what you fought for? And he actually agreed with me. I just say no. And at the meeting that I went to where I gave the gospel to these terrorists, the people were extremely upset because they haven't got what they've been promised out of this great revolution. And they were saying that the people that have got freedom in the country is they're not sharing their freedom with others, which is pretty interesting because, you know, what do they mean by freedom? And they can only be meaning that they haven't got land, they haven't got money, they haven't got wealth, all these things. But at the end of the day, you know, they also don't realize that they need to work for these things. And, you know, having a Marxist socialist that are sitting in power, these guys in South Africa have got so, their fingers so into the green money there, the green bucks, that praise the Lord they've left us Christians alone so far, and we can get on with evangelizing people and discipling the nations.
Because that's really the only really hope for South Africa. I recognized that when I was living there. The only way you're going to solve the problem between black and white, and it's not just black and white, it's black and colored, and black and Indian, and black and Malaysian. And, people don't understand the demographics of South Africa. They just read too many articles, you know, in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. They really understand what is going on over there. Well, we're going to be back here in just a few moments, here at Radio Liberty. ¶¶
very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working within organized medicine. The fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course I want to mention some of the other products that we have. Certainly, we carry the Miracle 2 soap products, and we can't make any medical claims for them. We can tell you that a lot of people who use them make all sorts of claims for them, and of course, there is a soap and a moisturizing soap. There's a neutralizer, which some people drink. It's a very alkaline solution. Some people says it helps their heartburn. Other people feel that it helps them in other ways. But, of course, if you'd like to get the Miracle 2 soap products or learn more about them, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. And that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And there is a special introductory offer. If you'd like to try them, if you'd like to get information, well, I would be glad to send it to you. And, of course, as I said before, we can't make any claims for the Miracle 2 soap products, but many of the people who use them tell us that they really feel it is a miracle. And so then let me mention the Phonopoly. It's a board game that will teach children how to read phonetically and spell phonetically and pronounce words phonetically. And, of course, in the schools today, children are not getting the truth. They're not being taught how to read phonetically. That's why usually it's the children from other countries or children from homeschooling who do so well. The latest champion as far as the homeschooling was an Indian boy, but he sure didn't get his education, most of his education right here in the United States. The problem is you have to learn phonics. It's the basis of reading. It's the way our mind is intended, our brain is supposed to work. So Phonopoly is 5 board games and 2 bonus games, and we throw in a couple of books. Most of these programs are $400, $500, $600. This is $139.95. And if you'd like to get Phonopoly, call us at 1-800-544-8927 right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan back at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this afternoon is Charles Van Beek, and of course we have Roger calling us from Allentown, Pennsylvania. Roger, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, thank you, gentlemen, and I'd like to ask if you'd be able to contrast both before and after the inevitable disillusionment. Have the people generally, before and after, been able to distinguish between, say, the Gospel of Karl Marx and the Gospel of Jesus Christ, and that the two are antithetical and at cross purposes to each other? God bless.
All right, fine. Thanks so much, Roger. And of course, did you get Roger's question?
Yes, thank you very much, Roger, for that. The question dealing with the liberation theology and the true gospel, I think it's a matter of that people don't realize the true gospel unless they actually hear it being taught. You know, they don't just come to an understanding by themselves. And we know that faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word of God. So that's exactly what we are doing as Frontline Fellowship, the mission organization I work with. We specifically work in the war zones of Africa where the conventional missionary can't live with his family. And we're looking at discipling the nations. We speak to people on all sides of the war. We speak to terrorists. We speak to conventional forces, freedom fighters, whatever you want to call these people, to get the true gospel through to them. And it's just unbelievable, the response to the gospel in Africa. Missionaries all over just saying how the Holy Spirit is working amongst the people. And when they've told the truth sets them free, and they come to a great understanding of the true gospel of salvation by the grace of God through faith, and praise the Lord for that. But it's unfortunately not just a natural thing that that people would just come to an understanding without actually being taught or reading their Bibles. many of them have been manipulated by the press and by the political rhetoric that's been going on for so long in our country.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about what's going on up in Rhodesia, because, of course, for our listeners here, you have to understand that our government brought Mugabe, who was a communist, to power. Initially, of course, he had elections there, and a man named Bishop Mezuelo, he was a black Anglican, as I remember, bishop, and he was elected overwhelmingly by the people. But you see, that wasn't what the leaders in Washington, D.C. wanted, what Henry Kissinger, who is a lackey for the Rockefellers, and the Marxist establishment and our own government wanted. They wanted a communist, and so they insisted that they keep having elections until Mugabe got in. Now, Mugabe was a well-known communist, and we put him in power, and we promised the Rhodesian people the honor of our American president and of Henry Kissinger, that if there were any problems, and of course, if the rule of law broke down, America would come to their defense. Well, tell us what's happened in Rhodesia today, or today we call it Zimbabwe.
Yes, Zimbabwe has been a nation that it's just an exquisitely beautiful country, and even under the leadership of Ian Smith, who, in fact, I just got an email from Dr. Peter Hammond. Ian Smith just phoned him the other day. He was the prime minister before the Robert Mugabe came to power, and the country's just gone down the drain. We've got about 7 million people starving to death in the country now. Robert Mugabe has started taking away farms from the farmers and kicking the farmers and their laborers and their families off the farms, and then giving it to his thugs and some of his ministers in government and some family members and all this sort of thing. So at the end of the day, the farms are not getting down to the people on the street. But even if they were, these people can't farm the lands. And so there is some people are going hungry. They're starving to death in the country right now. And when there is food in the shops, because of inflation, they can't even import food anymore. Their money is worth nothing. When there is food in the shop, a friend of mine said he actually saw people staring at milk and pointing at milk, you know, look what's in the shop today. And they were just looking at it because they couldn't afford it. And he went and also he topped the price of bread so that it couldn't go over a certain amount. And what happened? Well, people stopped producing bread, the businesses, because why must a bakery pay higher and higher prices for the ingredients for the bread, but they can't sell it at a profit? So people started starving. There's no more bread in the shops. And the country's just become a total basket case. And it's just an exquisitely beautiful nation. The people got it on extremely well in the nation. It's probably one of the best-run African states before Robert Mugabe came to power, and the people in the country probably got on the best in the whole of Africa. I mean, there was great working together amongst the people, and he seems to blame everything on the whites. Now, how you know, you only have 30,000 whites in a country, and it's getting less and less all the time. You know, how they can apparently cause all this damage to the country is just unbelievable. And typical of the Marxist, you know, he just goes ahead blundering around, wrecking the country, and then, you know, they blame it on the weather. You know, the weather's not good, therefore we're not getting good crops. You know, the white people are the ones that are causing all the damage, all this kind of nonsense. But at the end of the day, it's his own policies that are wrecking the nation.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this society, because Rhodesia did not have apartheid. The black could get an education. The black could vote just like the white did.
That's right.
And, of course, they did not want a Marxist society. In fact, that's, Ian Smith, of course, was the prime minister for a long time. Now, was he elected to office, or did he take power after the English left? How did Ian Smith come to power?
Okay, I'm not totally clued up on how Ian Smith came to power, but if I remember correctly, there was, as you mentioned already, the blacks and the whites had the franchise in the nation. And there were elections that did take place when he came to power. I just can't think of the original when he first came to power, because when he was first there, as far as I can remember, he was appointed by Britain. They were part of the Commonwealth. And then he declared what they called UDI, Unilateral Declaration of Independence. And from that time onwards, he was the prime minister of the country that became an independent state. And that's obviously when the rest of the world was really against them. And they had this war with the terrorist insurgents coming in of Robert Mugabe. And they were murdering innocent people. They shot down aeroplanes and all this sort of thing.
But most of the army, Rhodesian army, was black, wasn't it?
That's right. They were trying to protect themselves against these Marxist thugs.
And we insisted on putting the Marxist thug in power. And, of course, why would we bring a known communist to power? Well, maybe for the same reason we brought Fidel Castro to power, in Cuba back in 1959. But everybody's forgotten that. But then, of course, he's a good friend of Nelson. Pardon me, of David Rockefeller's. Maybe that helps out. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, anyway, it's after that, Robert Mugabe, as you mentioned already, they did have free and fair elections again, which they had been having anyway. And Bishop Masarewa had come to power. And the State Department of America and Britain didn't recognize him. They refused to recognize the elections, and they were told that they'd have re-elections until basically Robert Mugabe came to power. And he immediately moved out and murdered 30,000 people in the western side of their country, people that were against him, and then just carried on with his tyranny. And over he's just been wrecking the country and taking farmlands away from people just by changing the constitution, and it's just absolutely crazy. Things are just, the country's gone down the drain. Friends are telling me how the soldiers and the police come, if they find out that there's a shop that has got stocks in it, got food in it, which is not normal in the country anymore. People have been waiting up, sleeping outside the doors for days to be able to get in to buy some food if they've got money. And the police would come and chase them away with their assault rifles. They would go in, buy the stocks, and then take it back into the black townships and into the areas where the blacks are living, and then sell it to them at 400 to 1,000% increase on the what they paid for it.
And, of course, the people are starving there. You mentioned one family that had prepared for Y2K. Were they a white or black family?
They were a white family. It was a pastor, in fact, and he had prepared for Y2K and obviously to help his church members and just prepared for the future. And it turned out that he desperately needed those stocks with the way the country's gone down the drain. They're looking at inflation rates of 270% in the country. Their money's worth absolutely nothing. Nobody wants to do business with them. And it's just unbelievable how the Lord had helped him prepare in advance for this by stocking up beforehand. And the food inflation was just so horrendous that, you know, he saved himself thousands and thousands of Zimbabwean dollars.
Well, of course, the thing is that they've totally wiped out the middle class, and of course the whites can't leave the country. They take their property, but they can't get any money out. And so, and then, of course, what's the black unemployment there? I mean, it's just devastating. Before, everybody had a job. What's the black employment now?
I'm not 100% sure at the moment, because obviously that changes all the time. You can never believe these stats that get printed out from the government sources. But it's probably around 70%.
About 70%
unemployment,
And then what's happening with the AIDS epidemic? My understanding is that this is just decimating Rhodesia.
That's right. I've spoken to a doctor that worked in the Victoria Falls area, which is a little town where most people have obviously heard of the Victoria Falls. In that little town there, and he was saying that, this was years ago, he was saying that the HIV positive rate was about 50% at that time. So it's just unbelievable. A friend of mine that's a missionary up at Lake Tanganyika, an area called Mbale in Zambia, northern Zambia, was telling me how that they were looking, the doctors and nurses were looking for blood from children at a school to try and save the life of a baby, and they went through a whole class of children, couldn't find a single child that was HIV negative. And my missionary friend's wife eventually gave her blood to save the life of this little child. This is unbelievable what HIV/AIDS is doing in Africa.
And, of course, I would just comment for our listeners, if any of you would like to see the articles in the Washington Times and from several other sources, a lot of these children's mothers are HIV negative. In other words, they're getting it from the vaccines or from the medical care they're getting. How could something like that happen unintentionally? If anybody would like to check on that, we'll be glad to send you copies of the article. We have it. And, of course, there's some. The article was written by a man named Gisselquist, who's with the Royal Society over in London, so he is certainly not irresponsible at all. But, of course, they're not stressing that here in America. If we really understood that men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose, then maybe somebody here should be taking a stand and asking what's really going on in Rhodesia. Why would all of the children be HIV positive when many of their mothers are HIV negative? So, you know, there are lots of things going on. It's such a tragic, tragic country. And then, of course, Africa is just one war after another. I understand almost 3 million people have died in the Congo in this communist revolution up there. And, of course, a lot of this involves the wealth, the diamonds, the cobalt, all of the other minerals that are up there. Mm-hmm. And so we seem to have everybody fighting over the wealth of the country as the people are dying of starvation and being slaughtered.
Yes, and we found just in the country north of them in Sudan, we've got another 2 million deaths there, with the Muslim South trying to take over the Muslim North government, the government of Sudan, trying to impose their Sharia law on the South, and these people are fighting for their freedom too, and there's been about 2 million deaths there too. So that's in two countries, that's about 5 million deaths that you're talking about. And it's unbelievable how the government, getting back to the story of firearms control, is how these people always disarm the people through the law in the beginning, and then the next thing you know, their massacre is taking place. It's just unbelievable, the precedent that gets set for these genocides.
And that's, of course, what they did in Rwanda. They disarmed the people, and they slaughtered 800,000 Christians. But we never talk about that in America. We wouldn't want to, of course, upset the Christians here, because here in America, everybody knows that nothing bad ever happens to Christians.
Yeah, well, we saw that, as you've mentioned, in Rwanda between 1994, where the Christian Tutsis were being targeted, half a million of them were murdered, and they also had a gun control law that went through in 1964, the law on the control of firearms. People were disarmed, and the next thing, they couldn't defend themselves. We saw the same thing in Uganda. Between 1971 and 1979, where Christians and political rivals of Idi Amin, 600,000 people were murdered. Also, once again, there was a law passed again to disarm the people. Oh, we've seen it in China, in Nazi Germany, the Soviet Union, the Ottoman Turkey Empire. I mean, it just goes on and on, how these people passed laws to disarm the law-abiding citizen in the nation. The next thing, there's a genocide taking place.
Well, I think that should be a good lesson for the people here in the United States. But then most of them think that nothing bad will ever happen to them. So, they're really unconcerned. But, of course, I think we have to be concerned, because, if we don't learn the lessons of what's happened in other countries, why, of course, the same thing is going to happen here. Well, of course, let's get the telephone number for your ministry out. That's In Touch Ministries. And let's tell people how they can get copies of your book, entitled Shooting Back.
Okay, the book Shooting Back, The Right and Duty of Self-Defense, are discussing there the issues that at stake, the whole idea of what happened at the terrorist attack on our church, and how I had to work through the theological issues and the emotional issues and everything with that. And that book's available at 888-918-4100. And that organization is called In Touch Mission International. They are sister ministry. ITMI, In Touch Mission International, at 888-918-4100, the book Shooting Back, by myself, Charles van Beek, if you'd like to purchase that. And then our organization's name in Africa, we partner with ITMI, is Frontline Fellowship. And if people would like to go to our website, they can actually find very interesting articles on there with regards to Zimbabwe, and the areas we've been talking about, Sudan, all that sort of thing. They'll get up-to-date articles from our missionaries that have been into these areas just within the last few days.
Let's get the website again.
That one's www.frontline.org.za. Frontline.org.za.
Now, is that where we can get that article that Peter Hammond had written about the greatest revolutionary?
That's right. The world's greatest revolutionary is that article. And then the article with regards to me also meeting with the terrorists and going to that meeting up with Letlapa Bekhlele, that's entitled In the Lion's Den for the World's Greatest Revolutionary. And that's also on the website if people would like to read it or email it through to friends. And then if people would also like to invite us as a mission to come and speak to their churches or their home cells or whatever groups they might have, groups of friends that they want to get together, they're welcome to invite us through. They can contact us through the website, and we'll try our best to get to them. Might not be immediately, but maybe when we come through the States again, we can come and speak to people and meet them. And we desperately need your people's prayers and support in every way.
And, of course, we personally support Frontline Ministry, and we urge you to do it as well. I mean, there's people who risk their lives on a regular basis to bring the Word of God to many of the war-torn areas in Africa. So many of the situations where we're actually financing the oppressors of the people there, as we are in the Sudan. The money that's keeping the Sudanese government in power, that is killing the Christians, that comes from China Petrol, which of course raised the funds on American financial markets. So, well, I want to thank you, Charles, so very much, and I hope next time you get here to the United States, you'll give us a call. It's been a wonderful, wonderful to chat with you.
Well, Dr. Stan, thank you so much for all your support. We really appreciate it. We need you people in America to stay free so that there's hope for us, and we really appreciate the great work that you people are doing, and we'll pray for you, and we desperately need your prayers too.
Well, we will certainly keep you in our prayers. God bless you.
Thank you
so much. Let's give my best to Peter when you see him.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
And this is Dr. Stan, and we'll be back here in just a moment or two to wrap up this program here at Radio Liberty. And if we have a two-hour interview with certainly with Charles that we did last night, if you'd like to hear, that's available from Radio Liberty, as is this one, by calling 1-800-5-5-1.
That will really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Carr's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Carr's book, Inward to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Carr will give you tremendous insights into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Carr.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I want to mention, of course, that if you live in this area, any place you live in the country, we hope many of you will seriously consider organizing an Institute of the Constitution in your region. The Institute of the Constitution, of course, is a means of teaching people about America's Christian heritage. You're not going to learn this in school. You're probably not even going to learn it in many of our churches. And yet, America was founded by Christians as a Christian nation. Our courts, our leaders, our Supreme Court held America was a Christian nation. Just try and say that any place today. You'll be attacked by the media. Well, you need to understand the foundation of our freedom, which is the fact that God created us, and we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal and endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable rights. Call 410-760-6759. That's 410-760-6759. And inquire about how to set up an institute on the Constitution in your area. And then, of course, if we like to suggest several other books we hope many of you will want to get. One of them is called Regicide. And Regicide is actually written based upon the papers of a Mr. Robert Crowley, who was assistant deputy director of clandestine operations for the CIA. He was in charge of killing people. And, of course, they killed everybody who knew anything about the Kennedy assassination. We're going to be doing an interview with a gentleman very soon who was actually there when they who actually saw the autopsy pictures of the Kennedy assassination. The man who took the pictures was killed, and this man, his name is Dennis, was afraid to talk for almost 20 years. This is really the sort of thing that happened in America. You need to get the book Regicide, and you'll get it by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's Regicide. It'll tell you why the CIA killed Kennedy and who did it. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners across America that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will decide that you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day, reaching out across America with the news you're not going to get elsewhere. I mean, most people don't know we're bringing communists to power all over the world. Most people don't even like to think that we helped to finance this whole terrorist movement. We actually financed the terrorist movement initially in Afghanistan during the 1980s. And then, of course, we have helped it since then. And certainly our good friends, the Saudis, have been financing Al-Qaeda. In fact, what's so interesting is the law firm that's defending the Saudi government from the suit by the families of the 600 victims of the September 11th attack is James Baker's law firm, Baker and Boyd, I believe it is, or something of the sort. Anyway, James Baker's law firm, you know who James Baker is, of course, why he was the man who defended the president in Florida when they were trying to get the election results clarified there. And James Baker, of course, was the Secretary of State under the first Bush regime. And his law firm is defending the people who are funding Al-Qaeda and the terrorists for 9/11. What's wrong with this picture? Or maybe nothing as it really appears to be. You need to get the facts. You need to get our video titled Iraq, the Untold Story, and there's a syllabus that goes with that. That's Iraq, the Untold Story, or the syllabus of Iraq, the Untold Story, and you're going to find information there that you won't get elsewhere. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. You need to study it. And, of course, you can read the book through several times, as people have, or you can get the book and the video and the audio tape for $29.95. We call it the Brotherhood of Darkness Special, and you'll know more than most professors do about who really runs the world. And, of course, who is behind all of these various organizations, whether it's communism or socialism or humanism or the Council on Foreign Relations or the Bilderbergers or the Trilateralists or the Masons or the Theosophists or the Rosicrucians or the Lucis Trust or the Society of the Quest or the Skull and Bone Society, the Bohemian Grove. It's all there in Brotherhood of Darkness. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Get the book, or better still, get the Brotherhood of Darkness Special. And then, of course, we have so many other books. We have Regicide, the story of the murder of President Kennedy and why the CIA arranged for it and how they were able to prevent the American people from learning the truth. We, of course, have Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life by Dr. Blaylock, or his book, Excitotoxins, or Dr. Roberts' great new book, 1,000 pages on aspartame and how they're poisoning our children with the NutraSweet and other similar products. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Then we hope you'll go to our website, because on our website, of course, you will actually see the Berkey products, the Big Berkey, the Berkey Light, and we hope that many of you will want to have one of these. And the other thing is, of course, in times like this, when the government is storing up food for its people, because they know there are going to be terrible problems and a breakdown in society, and that's why they're setting up the detention camps across America, you need to make preparations for yourself. If you'd like, of course, to get catalogs for food or other products that you'll need if things do get bad in America, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we'll send you a catalog and make sure you get the products. Pray for America. Pray for our leaders. Pray for the people in South Africa and for Charles and Peter Hammond. But please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.